Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Confident Hypnotherapist. This week, I'm being joined by the wonderful Jane Nash. Jane, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm really good. Thank you. It's good to be here.
I know that our paths kind of crossed with the Hypno Summit last year, with a big shout out to Glenn and the guys there. And you were one of the speakers last year for that. How did that all come about for you? How did you find yourself becoming a trainer in the hypnotherapy world?
That was amazing because I saw them advertised, obviously, and I realised there was nothing on tinnitus, and because it's one of my areas. And so I contacted Glenn and I said, next year, if you want someone to talk on tinnitus, I would love to share, you know, what I've developed and where we've come with it. And he turned around and said, do it this year if you can.
Next year.
So I think I had about a week and a half to set everything up. And I panicked like crazy, but we got it done and it was really successful. A lot of people I got a lot of good feedback from people. And it was nice to showcase as well the differences and the changes that are around tinnitus, perceptions around treating tinnitus. I've done a lot of training this year with it as well. On the back of that, which has been
tinnitus is like, I mean, to be honest, even for me personally, if someone came to me with tinnitus, I'd probably refer them on. It feels like it's an area that is really niche. How did you come to such a fascinating niche like tinnitus?
I've actually got a bit of tinnitus,
right?
Just a little bit, and I was I've done a lot of really good training courses with the American Hypnosis Association, the AHA, and they offer one on tinnitus, so I trained with them, really just for myself, to see if I could make some changes with myself. And it was so successful, and I realised what I was doing with myself and the intervention I was doing with myself and how I was approaching not the noise, not the the levels of noise, but I was dealing with triggers that piss me off, basically. And the more pissed off I got, the worse the tinnitus was. So I was learning how to manage my own self. And when I learned to manage my own self, both in the present and in past events, the tinnitus diminished. Mm-hmm. And I thought, they've really got something here, the AHA. And I worked and worked and I advertised for some clients and I developed it and changed it a little bit because, you know, I found a few other little bits and pieces that worked for me. And then I put together the program that I do now for tinnitus. And so many people suffer with tinnitus. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And when I started to advertise it, people came out of the woodwork. You know, just so it was really for my own personal development. And then it just spiraled.
Is that what brought you to hypnosis and hypnotherapy originally, or was there something else that led you into this world?
Oh, wow. What led me into this world is a fantastic story. If you've got a couple of minutes, I'll tell you. So what happened was I'd just come back from the Marshall Islands and I'd been living on a tropical island for 5 years. And I experienced some trauma and I was in a good place and I was back in England and I was basically sleeping all day and up all night, so to avoid the world. And the program came on television and you'll know Paul McKenna.
Yeah, love Hopkins' work. Yeah,
I love him. I'm in love with him. Well, don't tell my husband, but I am. And the program said, I can change your life. So there I was getting up in the middle of the night every day and every night, feeling really miserable with myself. My life was at a hoo-ha. I'd been stuck on an island for 5 years. When I came back, mobile phones were in everybody's hands. That's how weird it was, because when I left, nobody had a mobile phone. So society had changed in the 5 years when I came back. I sat watching this program, 2:30, 3:00 in the morning. I can change your life. And I watched somebody who'd been a bit of a joke hypnotist. You know, he'd been sort of a stage hypnotist when I left the country. Suddenly do NLP and use hypnosis and use trance to affect amazing change in people's lives. And I watched these changes happen in a matter of minutes on the television. And I thought, I want to get better that quickly. I want to feel better about my life and where I am. I want to get better that quickly. And I decided that I was going to become an NLP guru. And that was what was I was going to do. And I was going to follow McKenna's sort of trail and do exactly what he'd done and learn how to make changes in people's lives and my own. But I looked and I found the right trainer for NLP, Rob Whitewood, who no longer is with us. He died about 5 years ago, I think. Dynamic Mind Works in Sydney. And I was waiting for his course. And I had nothing to do. And then I saw this advert for HMI, Hypnosis Motivation Institute in Tasmania. And I enrolled and I did some online work with them. And before I knew it, I was hooked into hypnosis. And I did it just really while I was waiting to do NLP. I never looked back. Mm. And I worked, and really I did a lot of training with HMI, went through their advanced courses, a lot of their HA courses as well. And as a good starting point for me, that really, it gave me my platform to begin with. So that's how I fell into it. But it was...
Were you as a hypnotherapist originally? Were you one of those people that was really confident from the start? Or were you one that was perhaps a little bit more kind of, am I doing this right? How would you describe how you were?
I think I was really confident until I said to somebody, I can hypnotize you. And they went, really? I said, yeah, come around on Saturday and I'll hypnotize you. I did and I couldn't. And I just felt like the biggest failure. And they just laughed at me. You know, they weren't very kind. And they were very happy not to be hypnotized. I think they, you know, they had it in their mind they weren't going to let me hypnotize them. Well, but it was a really good lesson. Problem.
Yeah.
I know. It was a really good lesson, you know, just for me not to be cocky and to me to say, hang on a minute. Did I need to hypnotize them? Was I showing off? Why was I doing it? What was the process? So many questions arose from that little interaction that it made me really stop and check myself. So I think I was super confident for the first 10 minutes. And then I was like, oh, and then I had to start building my confidence. And I think it took me a good 2 years to feel comfortable that when I got a new client call up, that I wasn't going to go to pieces, or I wasn't quickly looking through my notes all the time and checking what did I do in my training and how had I done that and how had I done this. And you know, it took me a while, I think. That's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I think sometimes it's those kind of little setbacks which, you know, remind us that we do have more to learn that can be really valuable. You know, I think if every client, well, actually, maybe not. If every client we had, you know, seemingly stepped into a hypnotic experience really easily, we'd probably be super cocky and confident. And there's no shortage of those sort of people in our industry at times as well. However, I've often wondered if that was that cockiness or that confidence that allowed them to sometimes get the results they did. You know, if they walk in with that absolute belief that they are going to be able to create a hypnotic experience for that person, then I think that that's part of the building block that's almost there to generate that experience.
I think it's important to have a bit of that. You need to have some air of authority somehow. I'm not saying that you need to be the big I am, but you need to have the confidence to know that you can do it. And if you believe you can, the client's going to look at you and believe that you can. There's a meeting of minds, I think.
Yeah, it might depend also on the type of hypnosis being done. So if it was a very direct Ellman kind of approach, then that kind of, you know, unwavering confidence is going to be absolutely perfect. If it was perhaps a more permissive approach, you know, even slightly Ericksonian, then having that kind of maternal feel to it may not necessarily be a bad thing either.
It's interesting that you call it maternal, because I don't feel like it is Ericksonian. I don't know. I recently, in the last 2 years, came to meet McNeely and did some more training with him, because you never know everything. Mm. And you know, thankfully. And I really learnt this power that comes with his, it's not a permissive style, but it's very much a facilitating style where you facilitate the client's own resources.
Style, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very powerful. I don't find it sort of soft and cushy. I find it very exciting in its format, but yeah, very powerful. And I'd avoided Ericksonian hypnosis for a long time. Because I just thought, yeah, well, you know, storytelling, you know, we can all tell stories, that's fine. But it's much more than that. It's got much more depth to it and got much more freedom to it, because it allows the client so much more room, I think, for themselves and their own truth, their own freedom within that. Definitely.
What kind of style was HMI in terms of how they trained? Were they more of a direct approach, or were they more of a Ericksonian style approach?
It's very direct. You're using catalepsy almost immediately. So you've got an arm raising induction, a lot of overwhelm. So you really are very much in a position of authority over the client. But it's good. It's good for a beginner. I think for hypnosis, when you're learning hypnosis, because it really gives you some set skills, some set formats to follow that do work, but they work without any doubt. But it is very much a direct leading the client into this area. You want change. This is the way it's going to happen. Mm. When they do their stop smoking program, they say, no. You will not smoke again, and that kind of thing. You have these big cons that come out. So
you make it sound very Shakespearean.
It's good. I quite like doing it occasionally when you get the right client who wants it or needs it. But it is very direct. It's not the kind of feel your way through it thing that the Ericksonian hypnosis offers.
I think that's when I learnt or when I was studying hypnotherapy, I think the academy I went to was a great academy, although I think like many places, the initial thing I learned was a progressive muscle relaxation, which is fantastic for certain clients, but, not obviously for every client. Nowadays, I begin to wonder if the PMR is more about how do you bore your people into hypnosis than necessarily about, something such as a using eye fixation or catalepsy. But I think also there's a fear for a lot of people that do learn PMR about doing that more direct approach, particularly with things like catalepsy, where there's a fear of what if the person doesn't get a cataleptic arm, for instance. Or what's your experience there in terms of, you've been able to train with people and work with people over time now. What do you experience as being some of the bigger limitations you see people come to you with?
I think people don't have a full enough understanding of what hypnosis is.
I agree.
I think that's the key for me. People have an expectation of hypnosis, which is unrealistic. It's based on fiction and fun and all sorts of and people's styles that they've done it for dramatic effect. It's not necessarily what is hypnosis. If we understand when I'm training my students, it's what is hypnosis? What is it? What is trance? What is it? An altered state? Is it a natural state? Does it mean if your hand doesn't move in this position, does it mean that your brain is not engaged somewhere else? No, it doesn't. And being able to recognize, teaching people to recognize the different signs of, I'll call it trance because it makes it easier, but to recognize the signs of it so that they can be more flexible in how they go ahead with the process of hypnotizing somebody. That's important, I think.
I absolutely agree with you. I was about to say, I'm glad that you raised that conversation, because I feel that quite often there perhaps is trains out there that don't necessarily go into it's hard to talk about what is hypnosis, because of course there's as many very definitions of hypnosis as there are hypnotherapists. And I think that there can be quite often a bit of a wild debate that goes on between people who might believe that it's state versus not state, or I know Rob McNeely refers to the everyday trance, for instance, and I think once you become aware of that, you can't go onto a train or into a cafe and not see that happening at times as well. But it's interesting also to talk to various people about, what they notice hypnosis to be, and are they noticing those signs that are happening that indicate that you can go from this step to that next step? And I think the other challenge also is when you get clients and you may not have the ability to guide them into it, and whether or not that's about finding our own style, if we're authoritarian enough or if we're permissive enough or what that exactly is.
I think there's a problem where hypnosis itself is easy to understand, to facilitate. That's not difficult at all. I think what's difficult is to know what to do once you've got somebody in a trance or in that particular space in their brain. And people, I think hypnotherapists sometimes, or inexperienced hypnotherapists sometimes, panic because they don't have the experience of what to do from a therapeutic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just enough to put somebody in this safe place to do an intervention or to get them to access their resources. It's how do you get them to access their resources? Mm-hmm. How do you get the client to bring them forward to a point of safety and resolution? And if the student, the young hypnotherapist, or the inexperienced hypnotherapist doesn't have that, that's really scary and that's really difficult. And I think it can really mess up a situation, you know, with your client if you're not ready for it. You need to know what next. What do I do now? You know, I think that's when I worked with my students. I've done a lot of time, especially when I do the tinnitus training. We make sure that we say, what now?
Mm.
Now you've got the client in this position. Now you've got them in accessing these resources. What now can you do with them? Because they're going to come up with several different scenarios, several different responses. Where do you as the hypnotherapist go? And I think it's important that they get retraining on this aspect of client work. And when there isn't the training available, it's really good for things like your networking group, where people are able to come together and discuss and put out questions and check with each other. Those facilities are great to have for, you know, people who need them.
Mm. You've mentioned a few names already, particularly places like HMI or Robert Neely. But when you reflect back over your career and the trainings you may have done, have there been particular people that you feel have been influential for you or who have really, you know, contributed towards your own development in your own unique way as a hypnotherapist?
I mentioned Rob Whitewood, who died 5 years ago from Dynamic Mind Works. He was my mentor and was an amazing hypnotherapist and NLP trainer. And he changed the way that I saw myself and how I dealt with other people. And to this day, I mean, I have a picture of him on my computer screen to remind me, just a little tiny one, just to remind me to keep it real, stay with the client, make sure it's focused on them, you know, and to move, to find a sense of being productive in everybody's life. Does that make sense? It's not just about a resolution. It's about what do you do with that resolution? Where do you go with that resolution now? So we say, oh, it's resolved. The problem's fixed. That's great. So what do you do now? It's not enough. For me, I want to see the client fly. I want to see them go and run the marathon or do the next thing. You know, that's what I got from Rob. I got from him, what next? Where can you get your client to go next? Mm-hmm. And I like to, he got me to go to those places. I want to do that for my clients. So he's kind of my biggest influence, I think. And I'm very sad that he's no longer with us. But, you know, we have lots of other amazing people. And the next person I have to say, Rob McNeely, who I've come to much later in my career after many years being in practice. And he's been this kind of, I laugh if I call him a guru, but, you know what I mean? He's kind of, he's a Yoda figure, you know, spouting out little bits of information that are really interesting. So it's he's made a big difference to my practice, definitely.
Mm. And I'd certainly recommend anyone who's watching this that hasn't gone to see Rob's episode of The Company of Therapy, go and check it out, because he really, there's just something about the man that's beautifully calming, wise words. He's just an absolute treat. He really is. Now, obviously, you've spoken about the fact that you've got you've had training in tinnitus and teach that. But I also know that you do other areas as well. What other areas do you explore, and how did you come to those particular areas?
I do odd areas, I know. Not that I was trying to corner a bit of a market that wasn't being cornered, maybe, you know, trying to do that kind of thing like you do. But one of the areas that I work with is mental illness and bipolar disorder. I'm very lucky to work with a series of doctors and psychiatrists with their clients. And it started where they would send me their ADHD patients to look at strategies and NLP strategies. And I found that using hypnosis was really useful with them. And to get them to slow down, find a different beat, find their beat, work with them in a rhythm that matched their brain, which is very fast, but at the same time, chilled on another level. You know, ADHD is a really cool thing to have because it means you can focus on things in ways that nobody can imagine. So it began there. And then I started to have clients who were bipolar. And you're not, I was always taught, don't use hypnosis with mental illness.
Yeah, I've always been told if they're bipolar, don't use hypnosis. So,
well, you working a lot with psychiatrists and the doctors, I learned a lot about not only the condition, but also the different states, both medicated and non-medicated. And together with stuff I learned from Rob McNeely, I have to say, I started to put together a protocol that meant the bipolar client could access their own resources no matter where they were in their own cycle. So I'm not telling them, I'm not fixing bipolar. I'm not curing it. It's not possible to do that. I wouldn't even presume to think that I'm bending or touching or anything. But what I try and hopefully do with my clients is, and teach my therapists that come to me to do this, is help your client who has bipolar disorder or a related mental illness, and I cover a few different ones, to be able to access their resources that they have available to them wherever they are at a particular space or place in their cycle. So whether they're manic or whether they're depressed or whether they're anxious or whatever is happening with them, it's not impossible to help them engage and grab hold of their strengths. And they do have amazing strengths. And I think it's easy to forget in the middle of a mental illness. I see clients who've lost a lot of hope and they come to me thinking that I'm just going to tell them to suck it up and do a bit of CBT and whatever. It's not the case. It's helping them get inside where they are, finding, remembering their strength and using that for them to help them cope with their day to day. And you know that the difference is that strategy you might come up with in one session of hypnosis may not work the next week.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like, this is going to fix the problem. It's not the case. But what it's going to do is that week that client comes to you, they're going to be having a much better week than they would have had otherwise.
And I was going to ask the question, you know, if I was to open up, you know, Jane's toolbox and look in there, what type of approaches do you find you tend to gravitate more towards? And obviously, I don't want you to give away any intellectual property here. And I'm also aware of the fact that, you know, the magic doesn't necessarily happen in you know, the technique itself. It's more about the process and you know, being able to be flexible with that. But, you know, do you tend to find that there are particular approaches that you tend to gravitate more towards in the work you do with your clients?
I did a bit of training in logotherapy at one point, and that really focuses me at purpose in life and place in the universe. And I think that influences how I go ahead with my clients and how I deal with them. And because of my, I think my foundation in logotherapy, which I really feel like I've got a foundation in it, that definitely influences how I move forward with my clients and how it affects them. I think that's the best thing I can say. And it's not giving anything, you know, any secrets or anything. It's just the way that my approach to them. And as you said, the magic happens. The magic does happen between two people, you know, in the room. And so that's, I can't account for that. I can't explain that or put a label on it or anything because it depends on the person and, you know, and their mood and what they're expecting when they come in.
How much of that do you think is a spirituality as well? Is spirituality an aspect of the work that you do?
It's an interesting one. I try not to let myself get dropped into that place, I feel it's a very spiritual thing that we do, healing. It's a very spiritual thing that we do. But I try not to let myself focus on it because I think I want it to be implicit. I want it to be part of me rather than an analysed piece that I take out and put to one side and look at.
What about if you were to go back in time and to speak to you know, Jane discovering hypnosis at HMI, what advice would you give to that younger version of you in terms of, you know, becoming the best hypnotherapist that you can?
That's a good question, actually. And one I hadn't thought of. I should have checked. I should have thought about this one in preparation. But I think the advice I would have given myself is to just keep learning, just keep an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many different ways of looking at something. There are so many different approaches. There are so many different interpretations. And mine is just for me. It's not for my client.
Mm.
So I've got to be ready to accept whatever comes, you know, whatever version of hypnosis somebody is going to offer me, I want to look at it. Whatever version of NLP someone's going to offer to me, I'm going to look at it. Whatever version of a technique, look at it. Mm. Because you're going to take something from it that will be useful to a client in a different way than you would take it for yourself. I think that would be the best advice I could give myself. I think I could have hitched my you know, hitched myself to a wagon and said, this is the way forward and it's going to be this way. And I'm going to do arm raising every single time I do hypnosis. And I did for a long time, my poor clients. And then I decided that I was going to, you know, bore them and talk long and long and long until I fall asleep practically. I tried all the different methods that you do. But I think keep an open mind, look at what's around, try it all, but don't stick to any one plan, because there is no one person. There's no like one, you know, carbon copy, like this is a human being and we treat them like this. So therefore all the techniques, these are just techniques, they're bits and pieces, they're ideas. They're droppings from people's idea and minds, you know, take them, play with them, make them your own. And if they don't work, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. That's the thing.
I think that's the absolute challenge that a lot of newer hypnotherapists have, is that they obviously go and study, they learn a technique, and then they take that technique into the therapy room and they're trying to make that person fit their technique. And when that person may not necessarily work with that technique, which inevitably is going to happen, they can kind of really take that as a pass or fail situation. And it can set them back then. They tend to wonder, well, am I actually good enough? Whereas, you know, what I love about what you're saying there is, you know, learn about arm levitation, learn about, you know, boring into submission.
Yeah, do it, learn it.
You know, useful for learn, some people. Learn about, you know, Rob McNeely and his wonderful ability to, you know, ratify what he's seeing and to be able to utilize what they like, or any of those sort of different approaches that exist out there, because we're all complex human beings. Mm-hmm. I always remind people, if there's a one size fits all approach that worked for everyone, I'd be the richest man on the planet.
And I'd be the richest girl.
Hardest person to see, incredibly rich, and be like, yep. And it just doesn't work that way.
No. Not at all. I mean, it's one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life. I used to be a teacher, and then I was a teacher of teachers. I taught teachers how to teach at university level. Mm-hmm. And I got so over teaching, I burnt out, and I just, you know, lifetime of education. You know, you go through school and you end up teaching and it's like purgatory. And then you end up coming to something like hypnotherapy and it's fun. You know, even when it's hard, it's fun because you're playing with this. It is magic, the brain. You're playing with the brain, and you're playing with, not disrespectfully playing with it, but you're playing in a way that's, you know, engaging, like a bit of a dance, you know, that goes on between two of you to get a result, to get some kind of relief, somebody, to get someone to move from one place to the next place. And that dance, that it is dance. So that dance is really fun to do. It's better than the tango because I'm really rubbish at the tango, but it's, you know.
What about for yourself personally? Is there areas that you feel, and you may not know because this might be you don't know what you don't know question, but are there areas that you think you'd like to explore next, or particular people who you'd like to do some training with next to see what they offer?
Actually, yes. It's something that came up this morning, funnily enough. I really want to work with bigger groups. I love the dynamics of the relationships you have with one or two people, but I haven't really worked. I've worked with big groups lecturing and training,
mm-hmm.
but I would like to do some big groups of therapy. And I think that might, that potentially could be a lot of fun. It could be quite uplifting for a group of people to go through something together, I think, you know, in a really positive way. So that, to me, I kind of came on this idea this morning when I was listening to Rob. You keep talking about him. He's got good press today for him.
Yeah, Rob's going to love this. It's almost great. Virtually an ad for Rob. So.
But I was listening to him, but I kept thinking it would be really great to take a group of people, say 4 or 5 people, and help move through. Maybe they're moving through pain. Maybe they're moving through just being stuck. But a journey of people in a therapeutic sense, which is tailored for them, because hypnosis has to be tailored for the individual mind and heart. But at the same time, to get a result where you take people together on a journey and you bring them out the other end. I just thought that would be really wicked. So I had little fantasies about that this morning.
You know what that feels like to me also? That kind of has elements of stage hypnosis as well.
Mm.
Because, you know, one of the things I love about stage hypnosis is, again, it's a very direct approach. You kind of need to have that confidence to know when to do what to do and to know what you're looking at in order to facilitate. Mm. And to be able to work with a group of people, whether it be on stage or wherever, I think they're some of the master hypnotists in our world, to say the least. So, you know, certainly hats off to the likes of Rowan Gazzard or Dan Kandel or a lovely guy in Brisbane, Jaden Boone. I should say hello to him too. But is there any particular things you think you'd work with in a group scenario?
Yes. I've worked with veterans. I've done a lot of work with veterans in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And working one-on-one with veterans is obviously what I've done before, but I would love to be able to take a group of guys and leave them in the safety of their group. They don't feel that they have to suddenly strip out and be naked, you know, emotionally with one person, as a single person, and to take a group of guys and help them move through possibly some trauma or some motivation work. Or I'm not sure, but in my mind, I've got this idea that I would like to work with some veterans to help them get through that and keep their team mentality, their team strength in with them at the same time.
Mm. Mm. Now, if people want to reach out to you, what have you got coming up in the near future?
How can people get in touch
with you? What can they learn from you over the coming months?
Well, to get hold of me is easy. It's monkeymind.cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So on the cloud, little monkey all the time. And pretty much Jane monkeymindcloud is Instagram, and wherever you look, monkeymindcloud. We've got TITUS training coming up. We've got for therapists.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some dream therapy training coming up on how to do dream therapy, which is a real fun one to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not when you see a big tiger, it means this. No, it's none of that rubbish. But it's really about how to code your own dreams and how to help your client code their dreams and then, you know, look at manifesting answers through dreaming, which is good fun. And we've got an amazing resilience 30-day course, which is coming up, which is mm-hmm. 4 international trainers working with me from Ireland, America, United States, rather, and 2 from here in Australia. And we're doing resilience training for women, which is using a lot of trance work, NLP, coaching, all sorts of different models to help people get through different issues. So those are the 2 big ones that are coming up, 3 big ones that are coming up. But if you just go on to AIMD, 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 on Facebook, which is the Australian Institute of Mind Dynamics, which is my training arm, we have the catalogue and the dates of different training things there.
Great. And we'll make sure that obviously around this video, there'll be some links there available for anything that's
super.
Because, you know, of course, it sounds like you've got so much to offer people. It'd be great for people to be able to utilize that.
Thank you.
One last question, because I always like to ask this one. You know, I've asked if you could go back in time and speak to your past self, what advice you would give. Flip side of that. If we could go forward in time to Jane in a year or so and bring her back. What advice do you think she might give you right now?
Don't worry, Lawrence isn't going to eat you. So that's the first thing, because I was really worried about meeting you. Is he going to be tough on me? No,
I'm never tough on anybody.
not at all. Advice, give myself in a year's time. I think just to stay brave. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get comfortable. It's easy to get secure and safe. And, talking to you about the idea I have with veterans, I need to be a bit brave to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have a little bit of courage about me to get that going, because it's not something I've done yet. So I think, to stay brave, I think, is the advice that I would just shake myself in the back and say, come on, Jane, stay brave.
How do you generate that braveness? What is it that you would do in order to do that?
Okay, it's easy and it's really crazy. It's different for everybody, mm-hmm. but I have a bit of a passion for Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm very nervous, I once anchored into myself a little phrase, and it said, I think I'm in love with Jackie Chan. So when I anchored the phrase into my head, with a voice actually, it goes, I think I'm in love with Jackie Chan. So when I did that stupid phrase, it makes me feel really confident and really like, yeah, I can do it. I don't know why, but that's how I get my confidence and my little bit of courage up there. I just squeeze my thumb and finger and I think about being in love with Jackie Chan. Please don't tell my husband, because, I'm completely in love with him, of course. But Jackie Chan, Jackie Chan, isn't it?
And it's such an unusual mantra. Generally, people have things like, this too shall pass, or, I can just be me, or something that's kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Spiritually enlightened. Whereas I think I'm in love with Jackie Chan is the most unique and original affirmation I think I've come across ever.
There are no rules on these things. There are no rules.
No, it's whatever provokes that state change for you, I imagine. And, if it means that it's provoked in a way that's going to really benefit and help people in a meaningful way, then be in love with Jackie Chan as much as you like. That's what I reckon. So... We just have to make sure your husband doesn't watch his podcast. No, look.
He'll be fine. He knows. He puts up with it. Bless him.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time this evening. It's been such a treat to be able to speak with you. Of course, as I mentioned before, if anyone wishes to reach out and contact you, we'll put your website details up online so that people can do that. But thank you so much for your time this evening. It's been wonderful.
Lawrence, thank you so much. It's been great to finally have a chat with you as well. So I was really nervous, but I feel much better now. So.
And for everyone watching, I hope you've got something of value out of this. And we hope to see you at the next podcast in a fortnight's time. But until then, stay safe and keep well.
Thank you.